The Round Golf Podcast with Richard Kaufman.
Hello again, welcome to the Round Golf Podcast with me, Richard Kaufman. Now, most people, when they're asked about Jeev Milkha Singh, well, what I've heard, oh, he's the guy, the Indian player with the quirky swing, or didn't he win in Scotland? And I suppose, in some way, both are true. But as this interview will show you, there's so much to life and background of Jeev. In this interview, you'll probably learn a bit about the partition of India, how it affected his father, who later became known to the world as the Flying Sikh, breaking world records. They made a Bollywood movie about him, and how Jeev has still got his own Olympic dream like his father. There's the nicknames, OJ, the marathon man, his thoughts on his own swing, his golfing hero, the many firsts he created as an Indian golfer, and here how he gets so excited as well as he describes the round of his life. Jeev, normally when I do these interviews, generally we start with the round, which you've chosen, but because it comes kind of later in your career, I thought maybe we'd do this chronologically, if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously start with your upbringing. You were, you know, the child of pretty famous parents.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be born in a family like that. I was introduced to the game of golf by my father. My father went to the UK for work, like a government trip. He used to work for the Punjab government. And he was presented with a golf set by his friends. They said, Mr. Singh, why don't you try this game out? He said, okay. So I was about 9 years old and he came back with a golf set. And he went to the golf course and I went along with him. And I got there, I had no idea what I was doing. And fortunate enough, there were other kids of my age there too, because that time it was considered a elderly gentleman's game, as I may say, when I started. And that was the way I was introduced to the game. And I was fortunate enough to have good company, young players of my age, all of us turned professional golfers. And everyone's playing on different tours now.
So how old were you then?
I was 9 years old.
And all these guys turned pro?
All these guys turned pro.
Anyone I would know?
Yes, you do. Amandeep Johal. Uh-huh. He was 2 or 3 years elder to me. Amritinder Singh, my age. Harmeet Kalong, he plays on the PGTI. Amritinder played on the Asian Tour. KPS Sekhong. All of us were right there playing with each other, you know, playing out of the bunker, hitting bump and run shots, being on the putting green.
Where was this?
This was in Chandigarh.
In Chandigarh.
In Chandigarh Golf Club. And it was awesome to be having that kind of company and pushing each other and getting the best out of each other.
And we touched on it there, your parents, your dad's involvement in terms of him getting the clubs. And obviously, him being a high-level sportsman, your mum as well, she was...
She played volleyball for the Indian team.
Okay, so your dad, I mean, you can explain what he did. I mean, yeah. It's an incredible story.
Yes, I think...
And like, it'd be wrong to tell, not to tell your story and not tell... Yeah. Because it's significant, you tell me, is it significant what he did to, you know, setting you on your path as well?
Yes, it was, for sure. It's been his role, in fact, my mother's role also, has been significant in getting me where I am, because I was introduced to the game by my father. And then after that, he, coming from the background he came from, he went to the army, and then obviously he had a government job. He made sure that I followed the same kind of rules and regulations in the house. And if I was going to become a professional athlete, I needed to wake up at a certain time, practice for a certain time, study for a certain time. And that was it. And it was like a set routine for me. And it was tough. But overall, I think it's paid off. And I'm glad that I had a routine like that. But the beauty I shared with my father was the relationship. I had a very friendly relationship with my father. I, in fact, never wanted to become a professional golfer. I did well as a junior, did well as an amateur, and then I went to the US on a golf scholarship. In 1993, I won the NCAA's Division II championship, and I was All-American first team both years, 92 and 93. And I played for Aberdeen Christian University, and I picked the phone up in May, and I called my dad up. I said, I won the NCAA's, Dad, and I want to be a professional golfer. He said, "Son, I thought you went there for a degree." I said, "Yes, I did, Dad, but I feel I can make a good living out of this game." And he said, "Okay, it's your choice, and we are supportive. Please go ahead. But don't decide after 5 or 10 years that, hey, you know what, you want to do something else." He said, "Because I don't have anything to offer to you, because I don't run a business, and you've got to do it on your own. And that's what I can give you. I can give you the guidance. I can be positive with you. I can tell you what is right, what is wrong." And that's what I did. And I turned pro in 1993 in July, I remember. And here I am. I've been a professional golfer for the last 27 years now.
It's incredible, and I want to get into that career, but I do feel like we need to tell you, because not everyone listening will know your dad's story, Milka. Yeah. I mean, he's legendary in India.
Yes, yes. Dad, in fact, ran 80 international races, and he won 77 of them. He broke the world record in 1964 Olympics, Rome Olympics, and he won the Commonwealth Gold in 1958 in Cardiff. He won many Asian Games gold medals in 400 meters. He was a 400 and a 200 meter sprinter. And he joined the army. And after that, after he did all this, won all this, he joined the Indian government as a director of sports. And after that, basically, you know, he retired as a government employee for the Punjab government as a director. And that's all I think I can say about my father, because he did really well. But what really happened when he was growing up was the partition, which took a big toll on my father.
So just explain, because there's people listening all over the world. I know what you mean by that, but what happened in India for the partition? He was in the village, wasn't he?
Yes, yes. It was in 1947. There was a partition in India. What happened was that obviously, Muslims wanted to be on one side and Hindus wanted to be on one side. And west of India became Pakistan, and the other part is India now, the subcontinent. That was a big changing moment for my father, because he was about, I would say, 11 or 12 years old. And he saw when it happened, what was happening was on both sides, if you were living on the west side of India, there were some villages there and the dominance were of Muslims. So what was happening on that side was they were killing all the people. His parents were killed. And after that, he had to run for his life. And he came to India, and his elder brother was in the army. And that's why he joined the army. What happened with that was it was a big toll on, or I could say a scar, that he saw all that at a young age. And he decided that he wants to do something in his life that's going to be meaningful and he's going to be remembered for. And he started running. He had no idea about running, and he started running in the army, and he won all the races, and then he got selected for the nationals, and then he won the nationals, then he won the Asian Games, then he won the Commonwealth Gold. But the beauty about all this was that it made him a very strong and a very positive human being in achieving or getting what he wanted. And people in India have given him the due respect. A movie was released in 2013 on his life, and it was a super hit. It was called Bhag Milkha Bhag. It was a Bollywood movie. I think the whole team did an excellent job. It was...
It means run, Milkha, run.
It means run, Milkha, run. And it is basically the whole life about my father, starting from his childhood till he became a famous athlete. And I think it is made so beautifully. And I would say the whole team did an excellent job. That movie won all the awards that year. It was the best movie of the year made. And I think they did justice to my father. And I think that's given him another 5 to 10 years, because nowadays, wherever he walks or he goes to airports, all the young kids come up to him and say, "Oh, I want to drink milk and I want to run." And, you know, it feels great. You know, it feels great to see that. And
sorry, when you say drinking milk, is that where the milker comes? Is that
It's just that because young kids in India these days or anywhere in the world don't like to drink milk. And sure. when my dad was training, he used to drink a lot of milk. So now every child who comes up and walks up to him at airports or train stations, they say, oh, you know, I drink milk. I'm going to run fast.
Did you, when you were younger, have to drink a lot of milk?
Yes, I had to drink a lot of milk too. So it's funny, but it's amazing to see how kids related to that. And the movie's made really well because I think the younger generation relates to his youth. And the elder generation relates to the partition part because they saw that. It was real. People in their 70s and 80s say, yes, this is what we saw. This is really what happened. And we had to run for our lives. So that movie did really well. And I'm happy that he's got the recognition he deserved.
But I just want to get to, because obviously it is an amazing story. But yeah. I wanted to, and I'm glad you've told it how you have, but in relation to you now, all these winning these medals and everything, you weren't alive then. You were born a little bit later. So when you're growing up now, two things really. How, because people must have been reacting to him as some kind of hero. So how was it having a father that was treated like that? And obviously to you, he was dad. And second of all, when you've decided to veer towards a professional life, how hard is it then to maybe live up to someone who's achieved so much in his life like he did?
See, when I was growing up, I knew that my father was famous because people used to walk up to him, invite him for functions, take autographs. So I had a lot of pressure that, oh, I'm Mr. Milkha Singh's son, you know, I've got to do the right thing. I've got to try to become as good as him or better. And but the beauty about that was that my father never put pressure on me. He just was firm in making sure that I follow the routine. Like, hey, you need to practice, you need to go to the gym. That's all he did. But in the evening when I came back home, we always sat down and had a very friendly conversation, like I could talk to a friend. And in fact, my first drink when I turned professional was with my father at the age of 21. So I had a very good relationship with him because I was in college in the States. I could have had as much to drink or partied with the boys, but I don't know. I thought that, you know what, my first drink's going to be with my father, and I had it when I was 21 years old.
Am I right saying your nickname at university was OJ?
Yes, that's right.
For it orange was juice.
Orange juice, because all the boys used to say, oh, he's not going to have anything. He's just going to have orange juice. So they used to call me OJ. Just get an OJ for Jeev. You don't have to ask him.
So that was a special moment then. You went to America, you just turned pro, and he was there by your side when you got your first win as a pro.
That's right. In fact, I turned pro in July 1993, and I came back and played the TDC Tour. That time, Malaysia had a local tour called the TDC Tour. I played four events, and I went second, win, second, win. I shot 50 under par for 4 weeks. And I said, oh, man, this game is easy. Till I realized I got into a higher tour. But it was an amazing experience. And my dad was there with me for those first 2 weeks. And after I won my first tournament, I said, Dad, let's have a drink together. I gave him the check and I said, this is for you, for what you've done for me. And we had a drink together. And that afternoon, I remember in Malaysia, and we thoroughly enjoyed it.
What was it like just before that, being at university in America? I mean, it must have been a bit of a culture shock to start with.
Yes, it was. It was. In fact, it was very tough for me coming from India, you know, where, you know, everything is taken care of. I went there. I had to drive. I knew how to drive in India, but I had to drive my car every day to the golf course. I wasn't used to making my bed. I used to get breakfast. We had help working at home, so we used to get breakfast, lunch, dinner, put on the table, and you just go eat. Whereas when I got to the States, oh, you got to fend for yourself. You go get yourself breakfast. If you need to make something, you make your tea or coffee in the morning. You need to make eggs, you make eggs if you're hungry. So I had to learn everything. But it was an awesome experience. I had to do my own laundry. I had to get gas filled, had to go get my car serviced, had to make sure I go to classes on time, get to the golf course on time, come back in time. It was full on. But I would say the reason I'm a professional golfer is because I went to college in the States. It gave me a lot of confidence and a belief system in myself so that I could face the world. And it's been a great journey.
Yeah, throughout the years. And we're going to get to the round eventually, because there's a lot that happens in your life and in your career before that. So you then get onto the Asian Tour. And you mentioned how when you first turned pro, the wins came in. It was all pretty easy.
Yes.
Did you find it easy as well when you got onto the Asian Tour?
No, it wasn't. In fact, those 4 weeks were fantastic, right? I made a lot of money. I said, oh, this is it, man. But that time, there was no Asian Tour, but it was Asian Tour, but it was run by John Benda, a person called John Benda from the States. So it went all over Asia. I played that tour. I basically made two or three cuts. That's it. I lost all the money I made. So I was basically, I had no money. And now what do I do? I went to my uncle. I said, Uncle, there's a tournament in Korea. This was in 1994. I said, I don't have the money to go buy a ticket, you know, just for my ticket and my hotel. Please, if you can get me a sponsor. And he helped me out. And I went there and I won the tournament. That's what changed my life, I would say. In 1994, I won the Chinnadongi Open and I won $80,000. That was a lot of money that time. And I said, man, I'm the richest man in the world. Felt like that, but that changed and made things comfortable for me. Then I could pick and choose. I then started getting sponsors who would just pay for my ticket or for my hotel. And I kept doing that and, you know, started building, started winning tournaments. And then the Asian PGA started in, I would say, 95. And that was an amazing tour. That's where I did really well. I finished like top three on the order of merit or top five. So I made money that way, built on my confidence. 1997, I went to the European Q School, got my card, started playing on the European Tour in 98, played there for a few years, kept my card. I said, that's great. From there, moved on. Kept playing on the European Tour, moved on to the Japanese Tour, played there, won in Europe, won four times in Europe, played on the PGA Tour for 3 years, and I would say my best years of my career were 2006 and 2008. I won four times in 2006, won twice on the Japanese Tour, twice in Europe, won the Asian Order of Merit, won in Asia also that time. Then in 2008, again I repeated the same thing. I won twice in Europe, twice in Japan, won a few times in Asia, won the Asian Order of Merit again, and I was ranked 28th in the world.
First Indian to make the top 50.
Yes, and that was great. And, you know, growing up, you know, I used to joke around at the caddies back home, you know, I'm going to play the Masters one day, man. This shot is to win the Masters, or this chip is to get into the Masters. And fortunate enough, I was in 2008. I played the U.S. Masters, Augusta National. Here I come! So it was awesome. I had goosebumps when I was driving in. I played it 3 years in a row, and thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite courses in the world, and my favorite major championship.
Chinhandonghe, when you won that, you said your uncle gave you the check. Now I know you've heard it because I did an interview with Daniel Chopra.
Yeah.
For the first series.
Yes.
And he tells a very similar story. However, you're the uncle.
Yeah, no.
So you wrote him a check for £5,000, $5,000, I should say, so he could go to Q School in America. Was this generosity, and I know I've spoken to SSP Chaurasia and how you've been generous with him, and I'm sure there are other examples that I'm not aware of. Does that come from what someone did for you? Is that where it comes from?
For sure, because, you know, I really was playing well and I wanted to play this tournament in Korea. And I went to so many people and I couldn't get help. And then in the last, I decided to go to my uncle and he said, yeah, I'll help you. I've played enough golf with you, and he helped me. He did well for himself. He was the president of the BCCI, Mr. I.S. Bindra. Everybody knows about him. And he helped me get sponsors, and I went for the tournament and I won. And I just felt that, you know, growing up with Daniel, we've shared a lot together. We pushed each other. We pushed each other to get the best out of each other on the golf course. And I said, this guy's too good to be not going to Q School. And I said, you know what? People have helped me. I need to help my friend. You know, I think he's a world-class player and I need to help him. It's a question of $5,000 and I'm doing well right now in life. And, you know, there could be a time in this game, you know, you go through ups and downs that maybe I one day need something too, you know. But I didn't think that way, but I just thought that, you know what, I'm going to help him. I gave him that $5,000 check. He got into the tournament and he won that week. And it was awesome. And after that, there was no stopping him. And he won two on the PGA Tour. And here he is playing all over the world, doing well. And now he's getting ready for the seniors.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've mentioned already that the golden period, playing Masters, playing Majors, contending at World Golf Championship events. Yes. When you're in this spell, winning, are you enjoying the wins? There's some sportsmen that just win and then they move on to the next. What kind of person were you with regard to those wins?
I was enjoying every single win of mine. I was just loving it. I was just building on it. It was giving me so much confidence that every time I teed it up, I said, you know what, I'm going to win this week. And the beauty about that after winning was that I used to go and do really well, because normally a win takes a lot out of a player. And normally the following week is basically a miscut or, you know, a bad finish. And I somehow came out stronger, and I basically won back to back. In Japan, I won Casio World, and then I went and won the next following week the Tour Championship in Japan called the JT Cup. So I did it twice, and I said, man, this is fantastic. And every time I played well, it just gave me a lot of confidence, and I just enjoyed every single moment.
Because you played a lot of golf as well.
Yes.
You were known as the Marathon Man.
That's right. I played all over the world. I used to play. I was a member one time, I remember, of 4 tours in the world. So, and I used to go continent hopping.
So
not
Europe,
country hopping, but continent hopping.
Europe, Japan, Asia, and PGA Tour.
PGA Tour. And I used to go all over. I used to play tournaments. Oh, okay, let's go to Asia for 2 weeks. Oh, yeah, let's go to the US for 2 weeks.
So what do you make of these modern players when they say, you know, I'm tired after doing 20 events?
I don't know. I guess they've got to make the right decision for themselves. For me, that time, I just felt that I wanted to play. I love playing, and I still do. And I wanted to play wherever I felt that golf course suited my game. I want to go there and play there.
But you had a period after 2000 where I think you got very badly injured, and your dad said that, you know, some players with, was it a wrist injury?
Yes, it was a wrist injury.
But some players with that kind of injury might never have played again.
Yes.
So, I mean, is that why you ended up taking every opportunity you could? Because there was a period in which that maybe it was all gone?
Yes. In 2000, in fact, I still remember that shot. My first injury, it was a major injury, was in Taiwan in the Johnny Walker. I was trying to hit this shot. I was very close to the bunker lip on the eighth hole, and I jarred my right wrist. I thought I was going to leave the club, but I couldn't. I left it with the left hand, but my right hand, I jarred it against the lip of the bunker. And my scaphoid bone basically was gone and all the ligaments on it. And I showed it to the top doctors. They said, Jeev, you know what? It's such a bone where the blood supply is so less. We can cast it for 12 weeks, but we're not sure whether it's going to be fine. So you just got to give it time. It could be 12, it could be 16 weeks. So I got the cast on for 12 weeks and I came back. It wasn't the same, but I had to make amendments with my swing. And after that, you know, took a lot of time, took a toll on me mentally too. And then slowly I had to build my confidence again. And then I got my Japanese tour card again and started playing well there. And just things started falling in place for me.
Yeah, you mentioned having to change your swing. Now, your swing, people have made comments about it. Yeah. I mean, that it's not aesthetically how a golf swing should be. Did you ever take notice of anyone making comments that were, I mean, pretty harsh sometimes?
Yeah, but I didn't. I said, end of the day, you got to get the job done. That was my attitude. I said, if it works for you, why change it? You know, and it worked for me under pressure. And I said, you know, till the time I'm putting the numbers on the board, that's fine. And I did hear a lot of comments, but I just brushed them aside and I just focused on getting the results and the numbers on the board.
Did coaches come to you and say, I can?
Coaches came, but fortunately enough, I was only dealing with coaches who wanted to improve on what I had, not that it was an overall change. Because I couldn't have done it. If somebody told me, hey, swing the club like Tiger Woods or swing it like Adam Scott, I wouldn't be a professional golfer. I would be getting another job somewhere.
So you were a smart golfer.
Yes, I was. It was a homemade swing, but it worked. And it got me the results. And I stuck to it.
Because your idol, Fred Couples?
Yes, Freddie, yes.
Now there's a swing that, you know, everyone salivates over.
Yes, and growing up, I always thought Freddie, what a man, I would say. I always looked up to him, and I've had the opportunity of playing with him many times and also meeting him.
So what was that like?
It was awesome, and I told him, I said, every time you were on television, I just said that you're the man who's going to win. And I said, you did it. And I said, Freddie, honestly, it's an honor meeting you, and I'm fortunate enough that you know, I'm having this round of golf, a professional round of golf in a tournament with you, and I'm enjoying every moment of it. And I think the charisma Freddie had on the golf course and off the golf course was awesome. The way he conducted himself, the rhythm he had in his swing, and he was a crowd puller. He was amazing.
Yeah. So we're talking about everything you've achieved. You talked about, you know, moving on to the PGA Tour, now playing majors in America, contending at World Golf Championship events. But when you arrived for the round, the Scottish Open, you'd gone 4 years without a win.
Yes.
2012 now.
That's right, yeah.
So, I mean, here's a guy from India turning up at, you know, the home of golf, not at St Andrews itself, but on a links golf course.
Yes.
I mean, is that why you chosen the Scottish Open and that tournament as the round? Or was it the length of gap between your previous win, or was it because of where it was?
Because of where it was. I won on a links golf course where golf started from in Scotland. I think I couldn't have asked for better. Coming from India where, you know, you don't even see a links golf course for miles, and growing up, we played basically tree-lined golf courses. And what made me feel that I could win on a links golf course was that I had played a few tournaments on the European Tour on the links courses. And it required a lot of imagination. It required a lot of feel. And I'm a feel player. And whenever I played a links tournament or on a golf course, I felt like, you know, I could do better. I could do really well on this golf course, these kind of courses.
But when you were, your first experience when you were 16, British amateur.
Yeah, that was not good at all. That was like...
I can say it because of where we're going, 87, 84.
That's right,
What did you think of links golf then?
I said, no, this is the toughest. You shouldn't be playing golf. You should be indoors having a cup of tea. and I said, no, this is not right. I think if we were back home in India, we wouldn't be playing. We would be sitting home in the house and just having a cup of tea. In fact, a good point you reminded me, it was at Royal Porthcawl, I think.
That's where it was, yeah.
That's right. I did the qualifying there. That's going back years. And, you know, the practice rounds were so easy. There was no wind. There was no rain. I said, man, this golf course is so easy. And I shot like 2-under, 3-under. And here I go when the British Amateur Tournament starts. here comes the wind, here comes the rain. And I did not know where to go and hide myself. And those are the numbers I shot. But I learned a lot from it. And I said, you know what? These are the shots I should hit. I should hit a bump and run. I should hit a low shot. I should put a lot of weight on the left side. I should move the ball back in my stance. Did all that. I learned over years. But talking about the Scottish Open and the last round, it was one of the toughest days, I would say. Especially in the first 13 or 14 holes. I'll give you an example. And this Scottish Open was held as Castle Stewart. The first hole, I remember, was a par 4. The first 3 days, there was not too much of wind. There was a little bit of wind, like in Scotland, they call it wee breeze. And it was quite strong for me. But I remember hitting a 3-wood and a pitching wedge on the green. I was on the tee, and there was a cloud burst, and the wind was blowing at least 25 to 30 miles per hour. It was coming sideways. And I said, man, hopefully I can make the fairway. And I said, I can't hit a 3-wood. I hit a driver and I hit a 3-iron. And that 3-iron wouldn't have gone more than 15 feet in the air. It must have pitched at least 30 yards short of the green, and it rolled up with the slopes and it ended up to 3 feet from the hole. That was my first hole.
You thought this could be a good day?
I said, that is a good start.
Because you're starting 5 shots off the... I mean, Saturday night, you know, players are coming off. You can't have been interviewed by anyone or anything.
No way. Because 5 shots out, there's no chance. And obviously, everybody knew that the weather's coming in, but nobody knew the timing. Came in, first hole, birdie. Second hole, again, tough hole, par 5, birdied that too. Great sandwich shot to about 4 feet. Hold that. Third hole, reachable par 4. Great shot again. Chipped it dead, I would say, about a foot away. Birdie. 3 birdies in first 3 holes. I said, hey, we are on a roll. Let's look at what's going to happen today. And then it was raining. It was cold. It was windy. Kept making pars, 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 pars. And got to the, I still remember, I got to the 16th hole. And before we get to the 16th, on the 13th hole, the weather started to change and there was no rain. With the wind, I think the clear skies came in. It was sunny, but it was really windy. So I salvaged a par on 13, 14 and got to the 16th hole. It's a drivable par 4. Hit a beautiful drive on the green. I said, great. And I was 5 under par by then. I said, I'm going to go 6 under par, man. That's it. It's.
And are you eyeing the leaderboard at this point?
Yes, yes. I'm looking at the leaderboard. And I said, man, I've got a chance, man. It's windy conditions. You've got a damn good chance because putting was really tough to win, especially in windy conditions. Putting is really tough, especially those 3, 4, 5 footers. I hit it on the green. I had like at least a 50 feet putt. I 3-putted. I said, man, that was not good. I said, dude, that's not going to help you at all. I said, you needed that. Anyway, I said, never mind, get to the 17th, tough par 3. Wind's coming in hard left to right because I've played the 16 downwind. Hit a beautiful iron shot in there, made a great par, 2-putted. 18th hole, left to right, tight driving hole, hard. Blowing left to right into me. There's basically... On the right-hand side, it's you hit it right, it's basically lost ball, you got to hit another ball off the tee. Hit a beautiful drive down the middle, kept it on the left side of the fairway, laid up with a 3-iron, and I said, you know what, I've got to get the right club so that I have a chance. I've got to get to minus 6 today. Hit a beautiful shot in there with the 8-iron to about, I think, would have been about 12 feet, and I left it short. Right in the heart. And I said, man, I told my friend I told Janet and I told my friend who coaches me, I said, Amritinder, we're one shot, I think. Went in there, signed my scorecard, having a cup of tea, had some chocolate cake.
We should point out, because you finished and because there's quite a few groups between you and the leaders. So,
yes.
I mean, the tournament was still got an hour or more to run.
Yes, it was an hour at least, for sure. I had at least four to five groups behind me. So I'm sitting, enjoying my cup of tea. We've packed a bag. We've loaded up. I said, Janet, let's just load up. We're going to have some tea. It was freezing cold. I said, I'm going to warm myself up in the player's lounge. I'm going to have some chocolate cake and we're going to take the flight.
Where were you flying?
Back to London.
Okay.
So, okay, do that. She was packing up. I'm having a cup of tea and we're watching golf on the television. Here I see.
Because Mark Warren's up there.
Mark Warren's out there. Norin is out there.
Francesco.
Francesco's out there. All of them, I think the golfing gods are on my side. All of them had such a good chance on the 18th hole to birdie and they just missed narrowly. And I'm watching this and I'm saying, I think I'm going to go in for a playoff, dude. They've missed the putts. And one time sitting out there having my tea, I thought we were going to be four people going in for a playoff. Mark, Norin, and
Francesco Molinari.
But how it turns out is that it's just Francesco and myself in the playoff. Now, I'm enjoying my cup of tea, and they're suddenly saying, after I see him miss the putt, they're saying he's going to put in a scorecard, and I'm wearing normal shoes. I'm running to the locker room, get into my golf shoes, off to the range, and I've hit like five shots, and the referee comes, we're on the 18th, Chief. You ready? I said, give me two more shots. I hit two more drives, off we go. Cold, windy, but clear skies now.
And now you've had a cup of tea and a bit of chocolate cake.
Chocolate.
You're ready.
I'm ready. I said, okay. I've got my sugar levels up. I'm ready to go. Here we go. Beautiful drive again. Same thing. Wind's blowing left, right, hard. Beautiful drive. Left side of the fairway. 3-iron layup. And now the wind is blowing so hard from the right and the pin is tucked right. I said, you've got to start this right of the green. And if you miss a right of the green, up and down is impossible because the wind's also that way and there's a lot of slope right left. Hit a beautiful 8-iron. Beautiful low punch 8-iron to about 10 feet. Get there. Molinari's hit it on the green in three. He's about 20 feet and he's left it about 4 feet short. And now it's my putt. And when I get onto the putt, the thought I had was that you're putting well today. The only thing I want you to do is get into your routine and make sure you get this ball to the hole. You got to go past the hole. Hit a beautiful putt straight in the hole. I birdied it. And that was it. I said, my God, I cannot believe it. I won the Scottish Open where golf started from. And I couldn't even imagine that, you know, winning a tournament on a links course where I had no idea how to play this game and how to play the golf course. And here I am. And I've won this tournament. It was one of the best moments of my life. And I was so proud of myself. And finished the round. Shake hands with Francesco. Janet, my coach, everybody was there. And here I am. I was going home to London. And then I was not in the Open Championship. Here I am. I've got a ticket to the Open Championship. Plans change. Where are we going? We're going to the Open Championship. So it was amazing. It was, I would say, one of the best moments of my life.
Yeah, I mean, and you can understand why. You know, ask the 16-year-old boy who shot 80-whatever at Porthcawl. Yeah. Ask you Saturday night. Never mind then. You'd never have believed that you would.
No, I couldn't. I could have never.
But you sound like you're talking to me. You're hitting this, you know, where you're describing it, beautiful shot. You hit, is that the best golf you played by a long way?
Yes. I had a lot of control in my ball flight that week, I felt. I had a lot of control. I was controlling it beautifully. When I wanted to hit low shots, I hit them beautifully. And why you do that as a professional golfer? I'm still trying to learn. I learn every day and try to know. But there are weeks when you feel that, hey, you know, every time you swing the club, you know where it is. And this is the shot you want to hit. And you're able to pull it off. And I was able to do it. I was hitting shots, low bullets, pitching them 30, 40 yards short of the green, running it up, using the right slopes. The imagination was amazing that week. The feel was amazing that week. And it was freezing cold. Whereas when it's freezing cold, you've got no feel in your hands. And I've always been a feel player. But that week, somehow, everything was on. And I personally believe to be a winner, you've got to be very strong mentally and you've got to sink in with the rhythm of your swing. So it was a perfect match that week, I would say.
Does it frustrate you though, as a sportsman, who you can achieve that level, that you can't do it more often?
Yes, it does frustrate me for sure. You know, it's just so tough. And that's the beauty about this game, that every athlete in the world has tried to do it, but it doesn't happen. Maybe it happens for 2 or 3 weeks, it's gone. And then it suddenly comes back to you after a year. And that's the beauty, but that's why we play golf. And
why you're now, 26 years, you played professional golf? Is that why you're going on? And
yes, that's why I'm going on, and I want to keep going. And I just want to get that feeling again, that week that when everything is perfect and I know what I'm doing and I win tournaments. And also I'm getting ready for the senior tour.
But how? I mean, I know there's a lot of good young Indian players, but I mean, I know it. Listen, you can tell me that opportunity potentially to play Olympics, to play in an event like that, where we spoke earlier about your dad and how he performed there as well. I mean, that surely would be the ultimate.
That would be the best gift to my father. That's the way I would put it, because my father represented India in more than 3 Olympics. If I could do that, and when he's alive, and he is alive hopefully, because he's 91, and if I could do that, I think that would be the best gift I could give my father.
It wouldn't be a bad one for yourself either.
Yes, it wouldn't be a bad one for me too, but I would be really happy if I could do that. And obviously there are only 2 years left, but you never know when that field comes back and things change. Everything turns around, and that's what I'm waiting for, like the Scottish Open.
I think that's a brilliant place to leave it. Thanks so much, Keith.
Thank you.
You can hear it, can't you, how much he loves the game, still after all these years of playing, can't you? The way he described that Sunday in Scotland, the lilt and joy in his voice, and what a story, what a background. His father is a real hero back in India, and Jeev, he cares passionately about the Asian Tour, works really hard behind the scenes to make it better, and he's doing a terrific job of that as well. Now, I'm sure Jeev won't mind, and I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to use this platform just to say a few words about Gordon Brown Jr., who, as you may know, recently passed away. Now, Gordy was a friend and a colleague, whether we were in Abu Dhabi, Wentworth, the Ryder Cups, the Open Championships. We worked together, and I got to spend a lot of time with him, a lot of time on air, sharing houses, hotels. And most of you will probably know about the Ryder Cups he played in. Of course, he was part of the European team who won for the first time on American soil. The tournaments he won a number of times on the European Tour. Gordon, I'm sure you know this if you listen to him as part of our coverage at the various events. He was a funny guy. He'd get the name of certain players mixed up. I mean, Kevin Kisner could become Kevin Costner, but that was endearing. That was part of it, wasn't it? And then in the evenings, after we're done, he was fantastic company. Mischief in his eye, ready for a practical joke, and so many great stories, and beautifully told as well. Just to give you an idea, you know, he'd bring things along as well. So at the last Ryder Cup in France, he brought along his own replica Ryder Cup. And we all got to, you know, hold the Ryder Cup, all got to have our photo taken with it, and Gordon loved bringing it out, bringing it with him. Just a few weeks back at the last Open Championship, he brought a photo in that had him and Max Faulkner in it. Now, Max Faulkner was the last man before Shane Lowry to have won the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. And, you know, he was always thinking ahead. His knowledge of the game was fantastic. Sometimes because he was joking around, you might not know that about him, but he did. He knew so much about his game, about the swing, about players, about the game itself, and he absolutely loved it too. There's been a lot of tributes to Gordon, and it just shows you how many hearts he touched. So rest in peace, Gordy. So that's it for this podcast. Thanks to Red Ray and Navigate Contracting, as always. There's going to be one more episode in the series, and I promise you, it's not to be missed. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to The Round with Richard Kaufman. You can follow us and get in touch via Twitter at The Round Podcast, on Instagram, Podcast The Round, and on Facebook at The Round Richard Kaufman. And we'd appreciate you taking the time to rate and review us on iTunes. The Round Podcast with Richard Kaufman, in association with IMG Audio.